The IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says President Bush's January State of the Union address, quote, misled the American people about the threat in Iraq. The White House says a sentence in the speech about Iraq trying to buy uranium in Africa should not have been in that speech because the information, it turns out, came from forged documents. Durbin is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is investigating the matter, and he appeared earlier on NBC's Today Show.
Unfortunately, those 16 words were included in the most important speech the president delivers in any given year. Who is it in the White House who was hell-bent on misleading the American people, and why are they still there?
The committee questioned CIA Director George Tenet for several hours yesterday. Tenet has taken responsibility for the Iraq uranium intelligence flap, but the Washington Post, citing unnamed senators at the hearing, is reporting Tenet yesterday had told the committee he never actually saw the final draft of the president's speech. He said he's taken the blame because an agency official did approve the address. The ranking Democrat on that committee, John D. Rockefeller, says he doesn't think the fault lies solely with Tenet. He says, quote, I think others in the administration knew the information was faulty. The rise in guerrilla activity in Iraq is expected to be on the agenda when the British and American leaders hold talks today in Washington, but Prime Minister Tony Blair is also expected to lobby President Bush for greater accountability regarding detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The story from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
The U.S. should determine the detainees' status and offer them internationally recognized means of defense if sent to trial, according to members of Tony Blair's party. They and others hope the British Prime Minister will also secure the release to the U.K. of several British citizens held at the prison camp. But it's events in Iraq and efforts to rebuild civilian structures there that's expected to dominate the talks. Both architects of the invasion remain under pressure to return that nation to self-rule and answer questions on the arguments they made for war. Alistair Wanklin, London.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me, my friend here wants to know if the girl in the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
Nine people are dead after an elderly driver plowed through a crowded farmer's market in California yesterday. More than 35 other people were also injured when police say 86-year-old Russell Weller drove into the Santa Monica marketplace at what they say was a high rate of speed. Weller reportedly told police he may have stepped on the gas accidentally when he thought he was pressing the brake. Labor Department today issued a surprisingly upbeat jobless report. The department says the number of new unemployment claims fell sharply last week by nearly 30,000. One economist says the overall unemployment rate finally seems to be slowing.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
With the cleanup effort already underway, officials in Texas are warning people now to be on the lookout for scam artists trying to take their money as they recover from Hurricane Claudette. Dan Parsons with the Houston Office of the Better Business Bureau says people looking to make a fast buck were just waiting for an opportunity like this.
The fly-by-nighters actually are usually well ahead of the storm. They plan to come this way. They will move into the area, and then they'll ply their trade just when people are the most vulnerable.
Parsons says the first wave of scammers will likely be in the areas of water extraction and carpet removal, with home improvement schemes likely to follow a short time later. later. Parsons recommends people be wary of door-to-door solicitations or people who only take cash and want that money up front. And he also says they should be wary of companies not listed in the phone book or with the Better Business Bureau. Wildfires, meanwhile, in three states, keeping the nation's firefighters busy. 17,000 acres in northeast Arizona have been blackened by the Kanishba fire. In California, lightning is suspected to have started a fire that spread from Riverside area to San Diego County. Colorado's Mesa Verde National Park also dealing with a lightning-sparked wildfire. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. It's raining cats and dogs. You're slowing down, being careful, but you hit a wet patch, and there you go, hydroplaning. Now, what causes it, and what can you do about it? When we come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and Christian Fittipaldi. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
When tires meet road water, they can do two things. Channel the water and remain on pavement, or skim on top of the water. Hydroplaning occurs when tires, especially bald ones, ride on a wedge of water and lose contact with the road. Your car is literally skiing in the street. When this happens, take your foot off the gas, but don't brake. Braking can cause your car, and sometimes you, to spin out of control. But the best way to hedge against hydroplaning is to equip your car with well-treaded tires. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome today to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast. That's real stations on the ground, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite. Now available in Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, and Jaguar automobiles, and soon to be standard equipment in many of those, and streaming live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Today we have an interesting bit of news from yesterday. The Miami Herald broke this story that John Bolton was going to be testifying on Capitol Hill. Undersecretary of State John R. Bolton, a leading administration hawk. He was supposed to testify either yesterday or the day before, and the CIA came in and just absolutely raised Cain about this. Apparently Bolton was prepared to say that Syria's development of I'm quoting from the Miami Herald story, Syria's development of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons had progressed to such a point that they posed a threat to stability in the region. Does it sound familiar? And the intelligence community, here again, this quote, Bolton's planned remarks caused a revolt among intelligence experts who thought they inflated the progress Syria had made in its weapons program. In fact, the CIA's objections ran 35 to 40 pages. This is not the first time in history that the intelligence community or the military have looked at a situation and said, we're doomed. Or this is wrong, or this ain't going to work, or it's not the way they say it, that it is. And yet the politicians go ahead with a program that leads to the death of American soldiers, that leads to the destruction of American resources, wiping out huge quantities of taxpayers' dollars and enriching large defense corporations who are major contributors to those same Republicans, those same politicians, pardon me, Republicans in particular, but the Democrats are certainly not without blame, looking back at LBJ and his crew. This happened most recently in Vietnam. Daniel Ellsberg grew up in Detroit and graduated from Harvard. He served as a company commander in the Marine Corps for 2 years, then completed a doctorate in economics at Harvard in 1959. He joined the RAND Corporation's economics department as an analyst, and in 1964, he was recruited to serve in the Pentagon under Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. Following 2 years in Vietnam for the State Department, Ellsberg eventually returned to RAND, and in 1971, he made headlines around the world when he released the Pentagon Papers. We're very honored and pleased to have on the program today Daniel Ellsberg. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you.
One little thing in your introduction, which is, was very accurate. I was in the Marine Corps for 3 years, but I was a company commander for several months. One of the best times of my life, actually, most satisfying, but not for 2 years.
Okay,
that was a mistake,
great,
of my publisher.
Yeah, fine. Thanks for setting the record. It's always good to set the record right. I noticed in looking at over some of the things that have been written about you recently on the web and things that you have on your website, that you were recently arrested for praying in Lafayette Park. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was accompanied by, I was in the company of a number of ministers, several bishops, actually, one bishop from President Bush's own church, and ministers, rabbis, priests. It was mainly organized, as they said, as people of faith, praying. And I was very happy to pray with them. I asked myself whether I was a person of faith, not in the same sense they are, obviously. I decided I was certainly a person of hope, and I was hoping still that we would avert this war. I saw great dangers in it, and I saw it as wrong. And we were arrested for an illegal assembly.
For an illegal assembly. Now, as
no,
I recall, the First Amendment,
where the park police said we had no permit to be.
Yeah. You were near the Capitol, right?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the bishop from Bush's church had said that a number of the bishops had asked repeatedly for audiences with President Bush on this and had been rejected, which was one reason that he was there.
Was the bishop from Bush's church also arrested along with you?
Oh, yes.
Amazing. I'm assuming that must have been in the news, and I must have just missed it. But
I don't know how much it got some news, but not a great deal. There was a Catholic bishop, and a number of other people. I was there had been an earlier similar arrest in front of mostly men and women of the cloth, a number of nuns, in front of the U.S. mission to the U.N. back in December. Again, I was in that same category, just being along with them.
Yeah, extraordinary. I'd like to point out to our listeners, by the way, that you have a new book out called Secrets, a Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers by Daniel Ellsberg. And your website is it Ellsberg.com or .org?
Ellsberg.net, www.ellsberg.net.
Ellsberg.net, thank you.
The book came out last October. A paperback is coming out this October. But I insisted that we put the first chapter on the web at the same time it came out. My publisher had some misgivings about that since they were just putting it on sale. I actually wanted to put a lot of chapters, and they limited me to one. But the one plus the preface is on the Tonkin Gulf lies, in which I was a mid-level, one could say, participant by my own silence. It explains in some detail how, on the one hand, the president, a president that I worked for, Lyndon Johnson, was consciously deceiving the public about those incidents in hopes of did get an almost unanimous delegation of power from the Congress, the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, to go to war, which he intended to use, having deceptively told members of Congress that he did not and had no intention of a wider war at that point. He was running a election campaign and won it, and with an unprecedented landslide against his opponent, Senator Goldwater, who was proposing such a war. In
right.
fact, we were in the Pentagon and elsewhere making all preparations and plans for widening that war soon after the election, which the U.S. did, which Johnson did. So the public was hoaxed, basically, into a landslide on those grounds. When people raise the question now, could the White House, could President Bush himself, and could his officials like Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld be consciously deceiving? Is that conceivable that they would lie us into a war? Well, I have to say that I was part of an administration that did exactly that.
So it's been done. It's certainly been done before. Now we see that there have been three, you know, rather prominent firings recently in the Bush administration of people who told the truth about the cost of the war or about how long the war was going to last. And this
Wait,
seems
that,
to be.
Who are you thinking of? That's interesting. Firings. Shinseki was not who had said that the occupation would be large scale. The chief of staff of the army.
Right. I should
fire.
Say departures.
I'm not sure he was fired. Did you have him in mind?
Yeah, I did, and I should say departures.
He was telling the truth, and the new commander there, as of this morning, General Abizaid, the commander of the forces in Iraq, made a pretty strong assessment there along the lines of General Shinseki's, which was even worse. Not only that we have to have a lot of troops there in occupation duty, but that occupation duty is in a war. It's not peacekeeping. He said
right.
We're in a classical guerrilla war. Well, that's the war I was in. 2 years in Vietnam, a year before that, getting us into it by lies, which I didn't write, but I kept silent about, I'm sorry to say, at that time. And then that was 3 years, and then 8 years trying to get us out of that classical guerrilla war. So I know quite a bit about such wars, and from what I've read, General Abizaid is saying no more than the truth. He's saying the truth.
Yeah.
Short.
In the chapter in your book, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg, you talked about your, in the Travels with Van chapter, you talked about your experiences in Vietnam and the sense that, you know, on the one hand, kind of death could be around any corner, and on the other hand, that you very often knew exactly where the enemy was. It was just almost a surreal description. Do you think, is it your sense that our soldiers in Iraq right now are experiencing something very similar? It certainly
exactly.
Seems.
Everything I read is like my experience in Vietnam, with to an uncanny and very, very dismaying degree. I hoped we would never be in such a situation, and here we are. When the president said on May 1st that the war is over or the combat is over, he was mistaken. And you may well believe that at that point. But as Abizaid is saying, the war did not end. We're in a war. This is a new phase of the war, and this one can go on indefinitely. But when you ask, could it be a lot like Vietnam, it is that way already. And what one aspect of that someone who experienced that from the inside is very conscious of, is the asymmetry, the enormous gap between the intelligence available to us and the intelligence available to opponents, to adversaries, who are seen by the public as nationalists, as fighting against a foreign invader.
Can you explain that?
Intelligence, and the people generally hide that from the ones they see, us in both cases here, as the foreign invader. So that our ability really to end that war, to win it, or to end it, is nil. It's very low. You cannot find them. You can't kill them. You can't capture them. To any ultimate degree, to any determinative degree, when they have that intelligence advantage. And I think there's every reason to think that that's the case today.
Yeah. Yeah, my sense of it is very much that after World War II, when we occupied Japan and when we occupied Germany, we didn't end up with guerrilla warfare in those countries because those countries' citizens both realized that their countries had been the aggressors, that they had engaged in essentially unjust wars, that they had been caught in it, they'd been defeated, and we were coming in and saying we're going to help you rebuild. And in fact, my father was in the occupation forces in Japan, and he talked about how, you know, they were largely welcomed, and this is just a whole different thing. This is so much more like Vietnam, where
whatever the reasons, there's no question that this is not an occupation of the form of Japan and Germany in which we rebuilt over time and so forth. This is a war.
Yeah,
so we're still
in
a war. This was one of the dangers that we faced in going into Iraq. There were others that were even more dramatic in some ways. If President Bush had been telling the truth, which he wasn't, about the evidence for WMD, for gas and biological weapons, conceivably nuclear weapons, so, and a nuclear weapons program. The war could have ended there with their, or not ended, the war could have proceeded with their using those weapons, causing many U.S. casualties, and I believe that we had plans, in fact it was leaked, that we had plans for using nuclear weapons in response. That would have
right,
been
I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought there, Daniel Ellsberg, because we've got a break here. We'll be back in 4 minutes. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
In case you don't know about the benefits of balancing your fat intake and you care about health, check this out. I'm Bob Harris for Smart Balance Buttery Spread. Scientists spent years searching for the ideal balance of dietary fats with no cholesterol, no hydrogenation, no trans fatty acids. Smart Balance used this blend of vegetable oils in a delicious replacement for regular butter and margarine with award-winning taste. Smart Balance. You're really going to love this spread.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of progressive talk radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I think our bumper music has gone nuts. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Daniel Ellsberg, author of Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, which became famous as a consequence of his leaking them to the New York Times and Washington Post, a courageous act for which, at the time, Mr. Ellsberg, I understand you figured you'd probably spend the rest of your life in prison as a consequence of that. That must have been a very difficult decision to make.
It wasn't so difficult when I had the example of thousands of Americans, actually, who were going to prison, and I for to make as strong a statement as they could, nonviolently and truthfully, against the war that they saw was wrong. I knew the war was wrong, but it was the example of meeting some of them face-to-face and realizing that they were doing the best thing they had it in their power to do with their lives at that point that really confronted me with the question, what could I do now that I'm ready to go to jail, having seen the power of that act? I felt the power on my own consciousness. And so very quickly I realized that I could tell the truth, that I had documents that would give the lie to what presidents had been saying about the war, both Republican and Democrat, for a generation.
Mm-hmm. All the way back to Truman.
Definitely. In fact, one could say FDR during the war, who made the basic decision to, for geopolitical reasons, for reasons of European strategy, to back the French in their efforts to recapture a former colony that had declared its independence. FDR, people don't usually trace the history back that far. But, by the way, am I, let me come up with a cover here. I know I'm on the Tom Hartman show, but are you Tom Hartman that I'm speaking to?
I am.
Okay. Well, listen, I heard the ad for your book there, and is he that Tom Hartman? I hadn't made the connection. I have ordered that book, having read several of your pieces on the web, which I thought were some of the best statements on the war and on other subjects I'd seen at all. I've been going around saying, who is this guy? Who is Tom Hartman? And I can't wait to read it. So congratulations.
Well, thank you.
In fact, I'd love to talk with you more after the program.
Great. Yeah. Well, this show
you're really
for 3 hours.
I haven't,
I'll call you later today.
It's a funny situation. I just hadn't made the connection.
Yeah. No. I'm sort of a jack of all trades these days. And I've been writing for Common Dreams for a while and for a couple of years. And have 13 books in print. Another one coming out this fall in Unequal Protection. I hope it lives up to your expectations. I think it's that's
just
another topic. Let's talk.
It was about the corporate responsibility.
Yes.
And, corporate irresponsibility, limited liability. In fact, let me make a connection to what we're talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying in your opening that this is not without precedent. This is not the first time that there's been what you called, or quoting the Miami Herald, a revolt by the intelligence agencies. Actually,
let me disagree with that
a little bit. It's certainly not the first time there's been a great gap between what the intelligence and military officials were telling the president and what the president was telling us. In fact, that gap is pretty common, and it was not only in Vietnam, it was certainly in the Iran-Contra affair, and where we were, among other things, giving information to Iraq as well as Iran, helping both sides in a war that cost 1 million dead. Many people knew that. We were helping Saddam Hussein at that time as well as what we call the terrorist regime of Iran, in order to trade for and giving them arms to both sides, by the way.
Yeah.
I laugh about this. This is horrible, you know, macabre situation.
It is. And one that is as bizarre as it is, it's also terribly tragic. I mean,
a case in which we were carrying this on with the lives of many people involved, helping terrorists in Nicaragua, which Congress had forbidden President Reagan to help by any means at that point. And he was getting the money from Saudi Arabia and others, and in part from sale of arms to Iran, giving the money in order
to support those terrorists
to
in Nicaragua.
Get back U.S. hostages.
Right, the Contras. And actually, to some say, to keep the U.S. to hostages in Iran until the presidential elections.
But we
have to take a break right here. We'll be back in 2.5 minutes. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stick around. We'll be right back with Daniel Ellsberg.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Striking hotel workers in Chicago are taking their protest into cyberspace this week. Workers at the Congress Plaza Hotel and Convention Center walked off the job on Tuesday after their employer refused to follow a citywide labor pact won last year, instead ordering employees to accept a 7% pay cut. Local 1 of the hotel employees and restaurant employees wants guests to avoid the 840-room hotel until the Congress agrees to a contract, and they're targeting the popular online travel company Orbitz, whose website invites travelers to stay in the hotel.
More good news for a year-long organizing campaign involving workers at a bulletproof vest factory in Florida. In January, a federal district court forced Point Blank Body Armor to rehire 175 workers who struck for the right to unionize in Fort Lauderdale. Yesterday, a National Labor Relations Board judge ruled Point Blank violated the rights of 3 workers it fired for organizing activities and ordered the company to pay them an estimated $300,000 in back wages and damages.
Managers of a Borders bookstore in suburban Chicago fired a known union supervisor this week, prompting union organizers to file a number of unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board. The worker was ostensibly let go for allowing a performer to set up a tip jar in the store in violation of Borders policy, but union supporters say that managers have similarly broken that rule without repercussions, and they say the employees' support for the United Food and Commercial Workers was management's real motivation for the firing. A separate complaint charges that managers quizzed the worker about union activity during his termination interview, also in violation of the National Labor Relations Act.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on,
there.
This is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to ieamericaradio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I love you, and that's all.
the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. In 1861, Abraham Lincoln wrote a letter to Colonel Perkins, a good friend of his. He said, as a result of the war, this is today's quote for the day, by the way. One of the folks in our chat room had said maybe the quote of the day should be, life exists outside the executive branch, a Zen pickle. By the way, if you want to drop into the chat room, we have a live chat room going at the same time we're on the air. Just go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the chat link. When you get into the trade forum, click on the chat button. It'll take you there. Anyhow, our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln, as a result of the war, corporations have now been enthroned and an era of corruption in high places will follow until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. End of quote. We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg, the gentleman who brought the Pentagon Papers to the world, who exposed the hypocrisy of the Vietnam War. Many were essentially familiar with the hypocrisy in broad terms, but he brought this the fact that within the government itself, they had commissioned this study to look into this and had concluded that this was an ongoing disaster, and we're hiding it from the American people. Mr. Ellsberg, in 1965, you quote LBJ as saying to his friend Senator Russell, these guys are not going to give up. And you concluded pretty much the same when you were a walking point in Vietnam, and the British concluded the same in Iraq back in the 1920s. Do you see that same? First of all, am I correct in saying those things? And secondly, do you see those that parallels between that and Iraq and also Afghanistan? I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Yes, it does seem very similar, and you're right to bring up Afghanistan. There's a situation where, like the Soviets, when they invaded Afghanistan, they basically held Kabul and some of these cities, but not the countryside, and that seems to be our situation today. We haven't, fortunately, I would say, invested that yet with huge forces in trying to govern the countryside, but in the absence there, it's governed by warlords and very oppressive people on the whole, and we certainly don't control it. In Iraq, of course, we have a large number of troops, and I would predict on the basis of Vietnam experience, I think we have every reason to expect that number will grow unless U.S. policy changes very drastically away from the dream of Iraq as a U.S. territory indefinitely, where we control the oil unilaterally and we control bases there unilaterally, and we make the deal with the U.N. essentially for them to take over this transition period and to get control back to the Iraqis as quick as possible. I would say it's essential for us to be getting out of there, basically in favor of the UN. Perhaps UN can delegate that to NATO and Arab states as well. But I fear that's fairly unlikely for this administration. That would mean sharing the oil with other countries.
Which is the thing that doesn't get spoken about.
Before we do, I think we're going to be increasing our forces and increasing our casualties.
Yeah, and the oil, I really think you just put your finger on the hot button. The reason why this administration, they go on the news shows and they say, oh no, we've talked to 24 nations that are willing to send in, they'll send in 800 troops from Albania or something.
Right.
But nobody has gone to the UN, nobody has gone to NATO. They explicitly have not, and the reason that they haven't, in my opinion, is because I think that the guys who put this thing together really believed that they were doing the right thing. And if you go back and read the document, the Project for a New American Century back in 1998, which is the people who put together the Iraqi war, that they have to secure the oil of the Middle East if we're going to continue to have an SUV-driven society. And they're not questioning that assumption that it's appropriate that we be consuming 25% of the planet's oil with 6% of the world's population. And on it goes. I mean, was that the same kind of mentality that you were seeing in the LBJ administration? And the other question I have for you at the same time, and maybe they overlap, is what was the reason that within the administration, the reason behind the reason, it couldn't have just been the domino theory of communism, just like this isn't really about stopping terrorism, this is really about oil. What was the reason behind the reason for us repeating the mistake of the French in what used to be called French Indochina and trying to seize that territory of Vietnam?
30 years later and more, I, who've been obsessed with this issue, you know, for most of my life, or a large part of my life, and many others, are still asking, what did LBJ really have in mind? What did Eisenhower really have in mind back in 54? But in particular, what did LBJ in making it a large American war? And a reason that that's hard to answer at this point. Well, there were certainly domestic political reasons that were very important. LBJ did not want to be accused, even by losers like Goldwater and his allies, right-wing Republicans and whatnot, people who were not likely to take the office away from Johnson. But Johnson did not want to hear from people like that, that he had been weak, a loser, a defeatist, weak on communism, not a manly man, as he put it to one.
May I interrupt you?
He didn't want to hear that,
there.
And a lot of people had to die to keep him from hearing that.
Yeah, if I can insert something here, we interviewed a fellow who was the number two commander of the Bay of Pigs invasion, who
number two commander met, where
of the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Oh, uh-huh.
And who met with LBJ? He was a very close friend of Bobby Kennedy's, and met with LBJ just a few days after JFK had been assassinated, and had asked LBJ to go ahead with the plans that JFK had to continue to try and overthrow Castro. And at that point, I think LBJ was just freaked out. There was a big concern within the administration that it was Castro who had killed Kennedy, and, you know, because of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee and all that stuff. And LBJ said to this guy and to Bobby Kennedy, basically, screw Cuba. I'm not gonna fight communism there, because that was what LBJ beat up, or that was what JFK beat up Nixon with, you know, in the 1960 election, was that Nixon, on his watch, Cuba went communist. He said, I'm gonna make my stand against communism in Vietnam. Hmm. Just as a pure political statement.
Hmm. I've never heard that.
That might be a part of the answer.
But in any case, I'm saying, why are we still asking that? And the reason is that there was no oil in Vietnam, anything as obvious as that, as a basis for oil, as a basis for war. I think that was that is a real difference in this situation.
And well, why did the French
make it very hard to get us out of Iraq? I don't think that the guerrillas over there, or terrorists who may well be added to those guerrillas, both terrorism both in this country and in Iraq, which can be a new element in this classic guerrilla war. I think a new non-classical element may be suicide bombers that we did not see in Vietnam, and which will take many more lives than the one a day Americans that we're seeing right now. And in the face of that, despite that, I don't think those people will succeed in their aim of getting us out of Vietnam unless, as I say, we turn this over to the UN, which the administration doesn't want to do. Because they're not going to leave the oil there. As long as the oil is there, I think we'll be very, this administration, and I have to say others, it could be even Democratic, would be willing to face heavy dissent in this country and a lot of American deaths, and inflicting a lot of Iraqi deaths in order to keep a grip on those second largest oil reserves in the world in Iraq.
Yeah, and the ones nearby, you know, securing the area.
Yes, use Iraq as a stationary aircraft carrier, as people say, a huge base like Kuwait, in the Middle East, from which to control the rest of the oil of the Middle East, including Iran.
Right. Now, in one of the items on the web that I found that was talking about you and the work that you've done, there was a discussion of a friend of yours, Lucien Conyen, in Vietnam, a CIA officer who was involved negotiating a truce with the Corsican gangsters who were supplying South Vietnam's top guys with heroin, or participating in the heroin trade with them as a kind of a fundraising thing. And heroin was big business in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War, a lot of it going to the American GIs, an awful lot of it being shipped back to the United States in body bags and in other things. And I noticed the other day that there was this small, obscure news report that Afghanistan is set to bring in the next month or so, the largest opium poppy harvest in its history, that it's one of the primary sources of heroin, you know, for the planet. And I wonder if you see parallels there between
drug trade. Are. I wasn't aware of this connection with dope and intelligence, dope and CIA and others, when I was there at all. despite the fact that people that I did work with, like Kunin, had been aware of that. Apparently, I read that from Alfred McCoy's book on the politics of heroin later, and my friend Peter Dale Scott has written a great deal on this, and he draws the connection with Afghanistan. In fact, he has a book called Drugs, Oil, and War, just out.
Yes, I know Peter Dale Scott. He's an extraordinary man.
And points out that when we carry on these covert wars, especially as early in Vietnam and earlier in Afghanistan, and when we support groups there that are themselves strongly involved in growing opium poppies or, in Latin America, in growing cocaine, that a flood of the respective drugs comes into the United States. That's a cost of doing business. We support them, protect them, and shield them, actually, from prosecution. Afghanistan is a very startling example, almost, because the Taliban, with the dark side of their suppression of their Islamic fundamentalism, being the suppression of women in particular, and a very tyrannical society, a theocratic society, also suppressed the opium growing in Taliban, in the Taliban areas, which was...
Although we paid them to do that.
And they actually had cut it out, essentially. So that the cost of cutting them, moving them out of power, with the support of the Northern Alliance, which had continued to grow opium, even during the Taliban phase. They were clearly the drug dealers who we were supporting, in effect, against the Taliban. The effect is going to be felt in American cities, and probably, according to Scott, largely in European cities, that a flood of Afghanistan heroin is going to go into Europe as a cost of our occupation there and overthrowing the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the war on drugs was simply subordinated to whatever the reasons were. Let's say the war on terror, which is the major ostensible reason. Again, oil probably had a considerable factor in that in Afghanistan. But the war on terror trumped the war on drugs, essentially gave up the war on drugs in order to do that. And I think something else is going on in Iraq. We're not conducting a war on terror there. We have had a setback, I would say, considerably in efforts against terrorism by our killings and occupation in Iraq, in an Islamic country. I think that's going overall to inflame worldwide terrorism against us. And the administration was certainly warned of that. But the motives that drove them in then are not what they claimed, part of a war on terrorism. It was clear well before the war started that Saddam had no significant links with al-Qaeda or 9/11, although the White House led the American public to believe otherwise, and they do believe otherwise. So whatever the reasons were, they were different from reducing terrorism in this country, and the effects are different. And I think oil had a great deal to do, and the oil of the Middle East, not only of Iraq, using Iraq as a base.
Yeah. What can we learn from your work and your release of the Pentagon Papers and your insights into the situation in Vietnam applies to the situation today?
Sure. Going right back to your opening, I said I had a small disagreement with you, and let me allude to that. As I was saying, the fact that the reasons given by the president are different from the reasons we learn maybe 30 years later or 20 years later from memoirs or tape transcripts from the Oval Office or documents that come out, that's standard. It's very deplorable, but that is standard. There's nothing new about that. Presidents, like other heads of state in other countries, lie much more than their own people can easily imagine, even their critics, more routinely, all the time. The lying that we're seeing, what is unusual is to have it exposed as quickly as we're seeing now. But the reason for that is what you call the revolt in the intelligence agencies and the military. And that is relatively new. There isn't a lot of precedent for that.
Do you think that that's because Condoleezza Rice, when she was in Africa last week, basically tried to pin the whole thing on the CIA, and they're just kicking back and saying sorry?
Well, they, of course, she was responding to a fire that's been building for a while here now. it's clear on the one hand that they could see themselves being the fall guys for the absolute lack of WMDs being found, you know, and the very evident discrepancy between what the president was warning us about and the reality. And they felt that they were going to be unfairly blamed for that. But I don't think that was the major... I think this revolt started a good deal before that. I think that both the military and the intelligence people saw a president and Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, and others, and Powell, for that matter, in the end, Secretary of State, lying us into a war that they felt was unnecessary and wrong and dangerous. And as I say, the guerrilla war we're in right now was one of those possible dangers. Another was city fighting in Baghdad. We didn't get that, but we got instead what we're getting now, this war. But this was all foreseeable and inside. And I think as patriotic Americans, they were very, very disturbed that the country was not just being lied to, but was being led into a disastrous war by those lies. So they began leaking to an unprecedented degree. The amount of leaking we were getting months before the war, and statements by retired people, recently retired people, like Major General Anthony Zinni, Marine General. And,
I have to ask you to pause right there, Mr. Ellsberg. We will have, after this commercial break, we've got about a five-minute commercial break here, and then we'll have about 3 minutes to wrap up. And
okay.
I would like to have one last wrap-up from you, if you can, hang on for this. Great, thank you. We're talking to Daniel Ellsberg. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, Tom Baudet from Motel 6. Some websites use outrageous gimmicks to attract visitors, like click here and get three wishes. But at Motel6.com, they have Click 6 web bargains that save you even more off the lowest price of any national chain. And you can only get them when you book online. Sorry, no three wishes, but you will have more money. That's usually wish number one anyway. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. Anacore Hotel.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows. And my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't cutting it. I still had flakes and dry scalp. So I switched to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers. Doctor recommended Celsin Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff. Plus, it keeps my hair and scalp healthy and flake-free.
If you see flakes, try Celsin Blue. Celsin Blue Moisturizing Dandruff Shampoo.
I'm telling you, it really works.
Never wear black without the blue. Celsin Blue. Use as directed.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy? Mm-hmm.
Ban ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Ban ji la.
You know everything. Xie xie. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I'll be damned. Here comes your ghost again. But that's not unusual. It's just that the moon is full and you happen to call.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. In our chat room, Timber Monkey says, a guy with the American Enterprise Institute is already priming the pump for a war against Iran. But Noam Chomsky doesn't believe we'll attack them, unlike Iraq, because Iran isn't defenseless. And Kahuna responds, Bush will slam Iran with a nuke in a snap of a finger. And somebody else points out, Bush is one of the few one of the very first presidents who said that he will use nukes in tactical warfare, in small-scale warfare, like as if we went against Iran. We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg. ELLSBERG.net is his website, the author of Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. Mr. Ellsberg, with these dramatic threats and bully posturings that are being done by the Bush administration, this testimony that was just postponed by Bolton about how Syria has WMDs and represents a threat to the world, Bush's willingness to use nukes. Many of us see this as an essential form of madness. And I'm wondering, in the minute and a half or so, 2 minutes that we have left in this program, if you can just give us your thoughts on what we as individual citizens can do about this.
Organize, the old union slogan. You mentioned inform ourselves on the internet in places, as you mentioned, commondreams.net. Which is where .org,
commondreams.org,
which is where I encountered your pieces with great appreciation. Antiwar.com, buzzflash.com. These gathered enabled you, I think, to inform yourself a lot better than you can get from any single mainstream source or even several of them together. The next thing is to demand that Congress live up to its responsibilities in investigating these, both the untruths and the pattern of hyping us for war, getting us to war, which, as you say, with Iran, is going on right now. We may have been saved, or we may yet be saved, from a new war in Syria, a little sideshow from Iran, perhaps, by this, what you called reasonably a revolt by the intelligence agencies. And there, I think, what does that revolt consist of?
Well, we have to end there, Mr. Ellsberg. I'm sorry, we're running out of time, but I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much for being with us on the program today. His book, Secrets, a Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg, ELLSBERG.net is his website for more information. And as he says, organize, get active, let's get political, let's get out there and change things. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Mike Malloy is rational, and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
you
put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News, I'm Corey Morris. Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin today says President Bush's January State of the Union speech, quote, misled the American people about the threat in Iraq. The White House has admitted a sentence about Iraq trying to buy uranium in Africa was based on false information and should never have made it into the president's address. Durbin, who's a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee investigating the matter now, made an appearance earlier on NBC's Today Show.
But it should come out from the president. The president should be outraged that he was misled, and he then misled the American people. He needs to go to the very heart of the matter. People need to be held accountable on his watch in his White House.
The committee yesterday questioned CIA Director George Tenet for several hours. Tenet has taken responsibility for the Iraq uranium intelligence flap, but according to the Washington Post today, Tenet told the committee yesterday he never even saw a final draft of the president's speech. He reportedly said he was taking the blame because approval for that address did come from somewhere within his agency. Reminiscent now of the Vietnam quagmire, the situation in Iraq is being labeled a classic guerrilla war. The new head of Central Command, General John Abizad, said Allied troops are fighting small cells of resistance and there is no longer any formal military action.
I think describing it as guerrilla tactics being employed against us is a proper thing to describe in strictly military terms.
Abizad told reporters at a Pentagon press briefing American forces must, quote, adapt to their tactics, techniques, and procedures if they hope to do away with the remnants of the former Saddam Hussein regime. 9 people are dead following a freak car accident in Southern California yesterday afternoon. Police say an elderly man drove into a crowd of people at an open-air market in Santa Monica at what they say was a high rate of speed. 86-year-old Russell Weller has reportedly told police he may have stepped on the accelerator when he meant to depress the brakes. Among the dead is a 3-year-old girl. More than 35 other people were hurt. Preliminary toxicology tests indicate Weller was not under the influence of any medication or alcohol at the time of the crash.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What? Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
There's no indication so far an ex-U.S. Marine committed any sex crimes while in Germany with a British schoolgirl who ran away with him. That's at least what German prosecutors are saying, and that apparently clears the way for the man to be sent now to Britain to face possible abduction charges. Police arrested Toby Studebaker in Frankfurt yesterday, ending a 4-day international search for the pair. The case has sparked fears about adults luring children over the Internet. That's where the ex-soldier first made contact with the 12-year-old Siobhan Pennington. Studebaker told his family he thought the girl was 19.
Let's read this one.
My favorite!
You want me to read her bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
A leading humanitarian aid body now has said the U.S.-backed war on terrorism around the globe is diverting financial aid from where it's needed more. The report accuses donors of pursuing more headline-grabbing causes, like the war in Iraq, and reducing their assistance to the poor elsewhere. More from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
Humanitarian aid increasingly favors high-profile emergencies, according to the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent in its annual report, which says it's the invisible poor that suffer. It says after invading Iraq, the U.S. raised $1.7 billion for relief and reconstruction.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting all across America on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, and broadcasting live on the Internet from radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com and archived at whiterosesociety.org. And today we're going to move along here into some of the realms of the war in Iraq, the differences between right and left, what's going on here. A native of Massachusetts, Chuck Morse, who's been on our program before, he has hosted radio talk shows since 1996, where he has forged a reputation as a conservative intellectual. On the air, Morse has interviewed and debated liberal luminaries such as Gloria Steinem, Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Alan Dershowitz, and his current opponent for Congress, Barney Frank. Talkers Magazine lists him as one of the hot 100 upcoming talk show hosts in America. He writes a syndicated column for World News, WorldNet Daily and Newsmax.com and has published four books, compilations of his columns, Thunder Out of Boston, Why I'm a Right-Wing Extremist, The Difference Between Us and Them, and The Gramsci Factor. Chuck Morse is running for Congress, as I mentioned, in the 4th District against Barney Frank. Chuck, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
Oh, I'm pleased to have you here. It's always nice to have you with us. Chuck, I want to read to you a few quotes from some members of Congress and just get your thoughts on these. This is from George Bender, Republican of Ohio. He said, "I know our people hate everything that Hitler stands for. We despise dictatorship in any form, but I challenge anyone to tell us the difference between the executive orders issued by Roosevelt and those issued by Hitler." Also, this Republican said, FDR is surrounded by cabinet members and aliens who are even more outspoken in their desire to comply with requests of British Army leaders for an American expeditionary force and seek to create war hysteria by provoking an attack upon us through evasion of law and disregard of principles of neutrality. Fred Bradley, representative Republican from Michigan, says, "The truth is the New Deal needs war to shackle socialism on your backs." The Republican Clarence Brown, Fred Bradley, also Republican of Michigan, says, "When are we going to get rid of Churchill and stop fighting England's war? If our president's leadership is failing us in this war, what can we do about it?" Usher Burdick, a Republican of North Dakota, said, "We often hear it said that we got into this war to preserve our civilization. That is not what these people mean at all. We should get out of this war to save the money system of England and the United States." Frank Crowther, Republican of New York State. "We are now faced with a spectacle that we would have an element of humor if it were not so tragic. The President of the United States and his Department of State with their arms around bloody Joe Stalin and begging us to call him comrade." A couple more here. Louise is trying to. Stephen Day, Republican of Illinois. "Britain, no matter what may be the reason, declared war on Germany, and under all rules of war and international law, Germany has a right to defend herself." The Republican from Kansas, U.S. Geyer, said, You may say that we are now in the war up to our necks. If we are, I agree with you, Mr. President, but it's contrary to the Constitution that you dragged us into this. You got us into this war, and we are in it just as Hitler got Germany into the war. Hitler did not consult his Congress, and nor did Roosevelt. William Hess, Republican representative from Ohio, says, and I quote, "While Hitler was teaching his people unity, self-sacrifice, and discipline, President Roosevelt was doing his best to teach Americans that the country owed every citizen not only a living but a swimming pool and a golf course to boot. While Hitler was spending millions on armaments, Roosevelt was raising an army of a million New Deal job holders to defend us." And Claire Hoffman, Republican of Michigan. "Mr. Speaker, going down into the hell of a war, the president would plunge us into satisfying his ambition to break the American tradition that no man should be elected." And he goes on to the third time of presidency. "And some of those who prior to Pearl Harbor were shouting for the sending of American expeditionary forces throughout the world," says Representative Claire Hoffman of Michigan, Republican of Michigan. "Some of those who prior to Pearl Harbor were shouting for the sending of American expeditionary forces throughout the world forget or have the effrontery to ignore the fact, and it is a fact, that following their course, our men, thousands of them, died at Bataan and in the Philippines. Other thousands, they go on, and they ignore the fact that we are the ones who followed a course of aggression, and that because of their political philosophy, the Democrats, our men are now suffering imprisonment and others are dying from lack of food." And finally, William Lambertson, a Republican from Kansas, said, "I voted for the declaration of war. Nobody would have told me that it would be on the 6th of December, but I did. But we were maneuvered into it." In your article here, "Loose Links, Lips Sink Ships," that is on ChuckMorse.com, great website for folks who want to check out your point of view and information on your campaign, you suggest that, and conservatives have been suggesting all along, that anybody who challenges this president on whether or not the country should go to war is unpatriotic, and you said, I don't believe the opposition party pointed accusatory fingers at FDR regarding his policies during the conflict. I just read you, what, 20 of them?
All before Pearl Harbor.
No. Many of them were after Pearl Harbor. In fact,
really?
Several of them referenced Pearl Harbor.
No, I think, Tom, there was obviously an America First movement in this country before World War II, as there's always an anti-war movement in this country and should be before any major war. And that America First movement cut across a lot of party lines. In fact, one of the biggest supporters of that was the Communist Party and their orbit. But their motivation might have been a little different. That's because they didn't want to see Stalin get hurt. But nevertheless, once the events of Pearl Harbor took place, most Americans realized that we had a hot war with American men at risk. At the time, it was men. And that it was inappropriate, certainly not illegal, of course, because this is a free country. This isn't a communist country where you can't do that. But it was inappropriate to say certain things that could put men who are in the line of fire in danger. And the point of my article is that I think that people like Senator Ted Kennedy and John Kerry are making political hay. They're trying to do something for really political reasons, self-serving, at a time by referring to our soldiers as sitting ducks in Iraq. I mean, these are guys who are facing, and women who are facing, very grave and serious situation right now. The war is on. I mean, we're beyond the debate of whether or not we should get into the war. That's a fair debate. The war has happened, and we're in it. And I can only imagine what it must be like. And I'm not a serviceman myself. But what it must be like to be in Iraq and reading the Boston Herald and being referred to as a sitting duck. I mean, I could also only imagine what it must be like for some of the terrorists and the Al-Qaeda-connected people to read that same comment coming from as significant and as important a figure as Kennedy.
But Chuck, don't you think that in a democratic republic that we have an obligation to speak the truth? Are you suggesting that our soldiers in Iraq are not sitting ducks?
Tom, I never suggested that we don't. Everyone should speak the truth. My simple point is that at a time like this, to try to make political hay and to try to take advantage by accusing the president of lying, even if he did lie, which we don't have any proof that he did, it just seems that with the shooting going on, I mean, you didn't see that kind of thing happening during the hot period of World War II, and if it did, then I condemn it, but most people did not. There's a time and a place for it. Certainly Kennedy has a right to say it. I have a right to comment on it, and that's what I do in my article.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with you that you have a right to comment on it and that Kennedy has a right to say it, but are you suggesting that our troops are not sitting ducks?
I would rather say that, well, I mean, they're in a hot war. They're in a dangerous war. The men at the Battle of the Bulge were sitting ducks. Did that make it any less likely that they should be there? The question is, they're there, and we should try to help them do a job that I think is a good job. I mean, what they're trying to do right now is that, in my opinion, they're trying to help set up some semblance of a reasonable and ordered society and government. They're trying to establish a constitution, and they're trying to get out. Now, of course there are dangers. Of course men and women are going to get shot. This is a war. You're dealing with international terrorism. But I think that at a time like this, big statements from big politicians who are trying to discredit our administration, and maybe there will be a time for that as things cool down, but at a time like this, it's inopportune. And because there's shooting going on,
it's inappropriate to talk. If you'd like to be on the program, by the way, if anybody would like to speak with Chuck Morse, 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937 is our phone number. And Gizmo, driving through Peoria, Illinois, is on the line for the guest. Welcome to the program, Gizmo. Oh,
hello, Tom. Thank you. Yeah, I'm listening on Sirius 145 left.
Oh, great. And you're talking with Chuck Morse, also of ChuckMorse.com.
Yeah, Chuck, I'm kind of curious about a remark that you made that, first of all, that I agree with you that we're in a war, but we're not fighting terrorism in Iraq. How do you explain that? And I want to take your remarks off the air because I'm on my cell phone and I do have to pay per minute. What I need you to do is explain, how referring to our troops as targets or, as you know, is going to incite the enemy more than our president telling our enemy to bring them on.
Okay,
I'll take your remarks off the air.
Sure, it's a two-part question. In my opinion, we are fighting terrorists. I think that the majority of people in Iraq, and 95% of people, are pleased that Saddam Hussein has been defeated, but there are certain people that continue to follow him that are afoot and that are trying to cause havoc as best they can. They respond every time there's a broadcast from Saddam Hussein, allegedly, or a tape, and Saddam Hussein has not been found yet. There are still a lot of people out there, and that this element is putting the country in fear, and it's a very dirty and tough job, but I would contend that they have to be defeated and that they're terrorists, not only against us and the West, but against the Iraqi people. And the second half of the question...
Let me just back up a little bit here. I've been in countries that were run by tyrants. I was in Uganda when Idi Amin was in charge. I was in Uganda during the War of Liberation in 1980 and back again in 1981 when Obote was running the country. I've been, well, throughout South America, East Africa, and in many of these countries. And you say 95% of the people are happy that Saddam has gone. My experience has been that 95% of the people just want to have enough food for the next day. That if the water's running, if the electricity's running, most people in most of these countries don't care that much about politics. And we say, oh, isn't it wonderful you can speak? For example, an Iraqi woman who was interviewed on TV the other day, how do you feel about having freedom of speech? And she said, I'd much rather have water.
Right, of course, and that's a given. But the point is that it's kind of denigrating to suggest that people don't also care about their future and that they're not glad to be rid of Saddam Hussein. But on the second half of the question regarding calling the American soldiers targets?
Well, let's get to that right after the break, Chuck, because we've got a break coming up here in just a second. But I did want to say that I really think that these folks are the opponents that we're facing are more nationalists now than terrorists. I don't think anybody is.
Well, I disagree with that.
Yeah, okay. We'll be back after a break. We'll continue this conversation with Chuck Morse, ChuckMorse.com. We got JJ from Alabama on the phone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Cross Country Tour by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the first and third tank of gas, the exit you missed, and the one that you took without even knowing it. Between the big city and, the smell of farm country. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims, court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
I got a note from the swell folks at Fleet, my credit card company. Actually, not a note, but a notice. This notice is to advise you that the following arbitration provision will be added to your cardholder agreement. It cheerfully began. I thought, arbitration. What needs arbitrating? So I squinted at the tiny print they used in this little four-page notice, which had no eye-catching graphics, no whimsical colors, and none of the chatty style you find in other bill stuffers that the companies really want you to, well, notice. Indeed, it's as though Fleet didn't truly want me to notice this notice. But I thought, don't be cynical. So I plunged into the prose. This arbitration provision will apply to all claims. Claims? Like what? Down in the fine print, Fleet told me. Sort of. The term claim means any claim, dispute, or controversy between you and us arising from or related to this agreement, any prior agreement that you may have had with us or another credit card issuer from whom we acquired your credit card account, or the relationships resulting from the agreement of any prior agreement, including yada, yada, yada. Whoa, I said aloud, trying to uncross my eyes. What's the bottom line here? Then I found it. Fleet's notice practically shouted that if I filed any kind of claim against it for fraud, false advertising, invasion of privacy, or whatever, it could deny me, quote, the right to litigate that claim in court or have a jury trial on that claim. Instead, I'd have to go to an arbitration firm of Fleet's choosing and, quote, the arbitrator's decision will be final, even though rights that you would have had if you went to court may not be available in arbitration, and the fees charged by the administration may be higher than the fees charged by a court. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop these corporate sneak attacks on our constitutional rights to a trial by jury, call Trial Lawyers for Public Justice, 202-797-8600.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What I feel, I can't say. My love is love for you any time of day.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Coast to coast, we're talking with Chuck Morse of ChuckMorse.com. Chuck is also running for Congress next year against Barney Frank of Massachusetts. And that's going to be a tough challenge, Chuck. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And, Chuck, you were answering the second half of Gizmo's question. He called in from Peoria, Illinois, about how is Bring 'Em On by Bush any different than Kennedy saying they're sitting ducks?
It's the exact opposite. I mean, to refer to someone as a sitting duck is saying is a statement of weakness. Now, for example, I happen to know a man who served in Afghanistan, Dan Napolitano, who said that he was stationed there, and in the third week of the operation, they read an article, and they're very concerned with what people think of back in stateside, in which Senator John Kerry, during a speech, referred to the Afghanistan operation as a failed operation. And I don't think that Kerry or others realized the impact that that had on the men and women who were in Afghanistan at the time. And
you think these guys are so fragile that they can't understand about politics?
Excuse me?
You think these guys are so dumb and so fragile that they don't understand that politicians criticize each other?
They are very affected by comments made by people in high positions of power, and that can have a very bad effect on someone's morale to have referred to that operation as a failed operation right in the middle of it. It's not a good thing to say.
I think you're vastly underestimating the intelligence
sexist.
Of our troops.
Excuse me?
I said I think you're vastly underestimating the intelligence of our troops.
Well, it's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of morale, and that it was a politically craven remark to make, and it was also turned out to be untrue. And I think that comments like that, while he has a right to make them, are not helpful.
Yeah. I would say that the morale derives not so much from whether or not some politician who is obviously an opponent of the president back in the United States is saying, hey, the president's a bozo, or the president did something wrong, or the troops are sitting ducks, or anything like that. I think the problems with morale come from the troops being in a situation where they can look around and say, what are we doing here? You know,
how do you think it would have felt if during D-Day, all of a sudden, a major American politician running for president came out and said, oh, you know, the French are really shooting at them, or the Germans, or just made a comment, even offhandedly, that was in the newspaper, that cast a negative light on the operation. It shouldn't be done. I mean, they can do it, they have a right to do it, but there should be a certain degree of decorum and responsibility when there's shooting going on.
Chuck, first of all, this is not D-Day.
That's the point of my article, Loose Lips Sink Ships.
This is not D-Day. This is Japan attacked us at Pearl Harbor. Germany attacked Austria and Poland.
And that's interesting, Tom. But the point is that during a shooting war, when men and women are standing in the front lines, you don't want to give encouragement. You don't want to make them look weak. You don't want to give encouragement to an enemy. I'm not saying that they aided an enemy. There's a difference.
Chuck, George Bush has said that this war may not end in his lifetime.
Fine.
Are you suggesting that? That's a verbatim quote from George Bush. This war may not end in my lifetime. Are you suggesting that for the rest of George Bush's lifetime, nobody should speak up or speak out against him?
No.
I mean, that's essentially what LBJ and Nixon were saying about Vietnam.
He said that 3 weeks after the attack of 9/11, and it had to do with the entire war on international terrorism. And it wasn't about a specific situation. And, of course, I'm not saying people shouldn't speak out. I'm saying that in a unique situation right now where men are being killed every single day, one doesn't want to speak specifically about a situation that could put either them in danger or give encouragement to the enemy. That's all I'm saying.
So if this administration wants to be sure that there is never dissent, that nobody ever speaks out against them, then all they have to do is make sure that there's a hot shooting war going on. If we can keep the war in Iraq going on for another six months or another year, and if that one peters out, then we'll pick up one in Syria.
Disagree with the war. It's another thing to call troops in the field sitting ducks. He's a right to do it, but that's another matter. Dissent, disagreement with the war, sure. That has to be done. That's part of freedom. But
Chuck, good point. We got to come up against a break. Hang on. You can finish your comment right after the break. We're talking to Chuck Morris, chuckmorris.com, candidate for the United States Congress against Barney Frank in Massachusetts. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Public land is woven into the founding principles of the United States, according to the former head of the Forest Service. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. control of land to the west was a sticking point between the 13 original American colonies, Maryland refused to sign the Articles of Confederation unless the other colonies relinquished their western holdings. All finally agreed, and the rest is history. Michael Dombeck says this agreement to share control over the frontier established the precedent for federal ownership of land.
Since that time, particularly the western states, one of the things they were required to do as a part of being admitted to statehood was to relinquish claims to unappropriated lands in their states.
Dombeck is the former chief of the U.S. Forest Service and co-author of a new book, From Conquest to Conservation. He says federal control over certain lands is in the charter of each state, and he rejects the claim, common in many western states, that the federal government should give the land back to the states.
The fact is, it was never theirs to begin with.
The U.S. Supreme Court agrees, rejecting state claims over federal lands as recently as 10 years ago. Dombeck says the federal lands are woven into America's history, sometimes in obscure ways.
Few people realize that Abraham Lincoln was the first president to set aside land for aesthetic values. And he did this on July 1st, 1864, when he signed a proclamation turning over part of Yosemite to the state of California for preservation. And, of course, this later became part of Yosemite National Park. And here we are in the heat of the Civil War. We have this president that's not really known for conservation at all, that realized the value of public land.
That's Michael Dombeck, author of From Conquest to Conservation. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call, 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, Mr. Sunshine. You brighten up my day. Come sit beside me in your way.
Oh, and the sun is shining here in the People's Republic of Vermont. I'm assuming it's shining down there in Boston, Chuck. We're talking with Chuck Morse of ChuckMorse.com and the conservative Republican candidate for the United States Congress going up against Barney Frank. And, Chuck, you still with us there?
I sure am, Tom.
Okay, great. The sergeant in the 2nd Battle Combat Team headquarters pulled me aside in the corridor, writes Jeffrey Conan of ABC News. I've got my own most wanted list, he told me. He was referring to the deck of cards the U.S. government published featuring Saddam Hussein, his sons, and other wanted members. The aces in my deck, he said, are Paul Bremer, Donald Rumsfeld, George Bush, and Paul Wolfowitz. He was referring to the four men who are running U.S. policy here in Iraq. These four are not popular at the 2nd Battalion these days. It's home of 4,000 troops of the 2nd Brigade of the Army's 3rd Infantry Division. The soldiers were deployed to Kuwait last September. It goes on and on and on. Quote, if Donald Rumsfeld were sitting here in front of us, what would you say to him? I asked a group of soldiers who gathered around a table, eager to talk to a visiting reporter. In the back of the group, Specialist Clinton Dietz put up his hand. If Donald Rumsfeld was here, he said, I would ask him for his resignation. This was long before Ted Kennedy said anything. Don't you think that morale is already a problem because
yes,
these
I
guys
do.
Are realizing that they're just there to protect the oil interests of
Well, putting
of
that aside, yes, I do think it's already a problem. It's a very difficult very brutal job. It's not one that I can't imagine it. I'm not a serviceman, so I wouldn't criticize anybody. I'd only praise them. It's not an easy situation to be in. I hope that they're careful not to cross the line and become insubordinate, because that's a dangerous phenomenon historically. If you have military who want to revolt. But I don't think they do. They certainly have a right to express it. They're stuck in a miserable situation. We all hope they come back sooner. We hope that the country coalesces behind this so that, we can get them back sooner. Are you suggesting that they should just pull out tomorrow? I mean, I think that they're there to do a job that is the right job to do. They're trying to stabilize
the government.
Well,
Chuck, that's essentially what we did in Afghanistan. We've pulled out of all of the peripheral areas. We've maintained our presence in Kabul, but most of Afghanistan has now returned to the power
of
the warlords, and the Taliban has even returned.
That's a terrible exaggeration.
No, it's not. We control three cities in Afghanistan, and that's it right now.
Standing as we control most of the country, there's pockets of resistance and there's tribal areas and all of that, but for the most part, things are moving forward, and I support that as well.
Okay.
We're on the right side of history in the same way as we were when we fought the National Socialists in Germany and the International Socialists in Russia.
Let's hope you're right. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. And Roy from Rio Rancho is on the line. I'm assuming that's in New Mexico, Roy?
You bet, Tom. Hi.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Couple three questions for the guests, and I'm going to work real hard at trying not to get personal, but number one, I'd like to know, what was your service background, sir?
Did not serve.
Oh, okay, so that, okay, well, you were...
But that doesn't disqualify him, Roy. I mean, let's not make this personal.
I know
personal,
that, but on the other hand, I think he's greatly underestimating the intelligence of the Iraqis.
I think your host is. I think the Iraqis want to have freedom just like you do.
They don't understand that the troops are setting ducks. They don't need Kennedy to use the term setting ducks.
I disagree with that. I think the troops are supported by, or at least the Iraqi people understand that the troops are trying to help get rid of the remnants of Saddam Hussein who are taking pot shots at them.
I'll give you 95% of them. That means 5% of them know and understand that individual troopers are scenting ducks.
Yeah, so what was your second point there, Roy?
And then he's underestimating the intelligence of the American troops, that they don't understand that they're scenting ducks.
Well, I mean, they were scenting ducks when they landed in Normandy,
too. They're scenting
ducks.
That
doesn't mean you need a senior senator from Massachusetts to say it so that everybody in the world hears it, including the enemy.
Of
course they're setting ducks. It's a war, for God's sake.
Was it the same factor in Vietnam when people were talking about how the M-14s would get stuck in the mud and couldn't shoot, so the guys couldn't defend themselves?
Well, actually,
we got lied to in Vietnam, sir.
Yes, we did, and I think
we got lied to.
Well, that's another subject, and it's
Nixon,
fascinating one. I've written
overseas,
several columns,
sir,
in Vietnam. The rules of engagement showed that we were there only halfway. I mean, either we should have been there to finish that war or not.
To go to one other point, your point about us with Afghanistan. If we're doing such a good job in Afghanistan, how come they just had a record poppy crop?
Well,
Can you explain that to me? If we have taken over the hearts and the minds...
The largest in history, Roy. It's the largest poppy crop, the largest opium crop
in the history
of Afghanistan.
I mean, I'm glad you guys...
You don't mess as Ellsworth said.
Okay, we've got a wiped out phone system. Everybody talking all at once. Roy, thank you for the call and thanks for that comment. We'll give you a chance to respond to that, Chuck, and then we're going to go to David from Santa Fe. Chuck?
Well, I hope we can do better there. I'm not going to sit here and exult over the fact, like that caller was, that we're not doing as well as we could be.
Okay, great. David in Santa Fe, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, you're on the air. David
Hello.
In Santa Fe.
Yeah, I think George Bush said we were sitting ducks when he was running against Al Gore and said our military is not prepared. So now, if somebody were to attack us now. But what I don't understand is why Dick Durbin is not allowed to criticize the war effort because he was against the war. I don't understand that logic.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that when Bush was running for office, we weren't in a hot war at the time, and he was pointing out that we were not properly defended.
Right, and he was inviting a hot war by saying, look, now's a good time to attack us.
No, I think he was pointing out that the country needed to improve its defense, and that's exactly what he's been doing.
I think he was giving comfort to the enemy by saying, look, now is a good time. And then there we had 9/11. So.
Well, that's an opinion.
Yeah,
and,
see,
you know,
I got to disagree with both of you guys and say that I think that dissent in a democracy is not only a useful and healthy thing, but what it says to the enemy is we're so strong, we can even argue with ourselves and still defend ourselves and causes the rest of the world to look at us and say, gee, we'd like to be like that. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. We're talking with Chuck Morse. ChuckMorse.com is his website, regular columnist for Newsmax. And other websites, conservative running for the United States House of Representatives. We have Jeanette from Santa Fe on the line. Jeanette, welcome to the program.
I want to ask Chuck if he believes that our government has the proper resources, be it whatever you call it, to see exactly where Saddam Hussein is sitting at the moment, and that they will, in fact, pick him off when they choose. And in fact,
are you implying that they know where he is but they're not picking him up?
Yes.
All right, well, I think that's a preposterous
it is
and silly
not.
Left-wing
I believe that
theory.
The government has the equipment to see from all the way up to all the way down, and that it they need Saddam to create this frenzy that won't work out for them to get the oil, but it creates the frenzy and the justification for war.
Fascinating conspiracy theory. Very wacky, though.
Yeah. It could be, you know, we know that they have satellites that can read a license plate from outer space. Jeanette, thanks for the call.
That. And they can pick him off when they choose, and they will.
Maybe. It may be. Jeanette, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. I'm not convinced of that, frankly. I think that there are a lot of hiding places on this planet, and I really think that if they knew where Saddam and Osama bin Laden were, for that matter, that they'd probably go after them, although they probably have a good notion that Osama is in Pakistan.
From a personal security position, to think that there's such technology that could know where everybody is. I mean, what does that say about all of us?
There you go. Chris in Georgia is on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES. Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We're talking with Chuck Morse. What's up, Chris?
Well, Tom, my first bone to pick is with you. These right-wing talk show hosts, they never give liberals any airtime, and I don't know why you continually want to give these idiots airtime.
Because I think that it's important that other people who share my political perspective have an example of how to argue with these folks, frankly. I do think that it is real that people want to win the water cooler wars and that they do want to know how to hold their own in these arguments. And frankly, the people on the right, I think, in many cases, do give people on the left an opportunity to talk. You know, Hannity and Combs, for example, and O'Reilly, they're famous for bringing
up. But not on the radio.
They beat them up.
I do.
But
I have no
and
Chomsky
Chuck
all
brings
time.
Lefties onto his show all the time.
Exactly.
So,
all right.
So,
in fact, I always
number
have
two,
left
Chuck,
team.
You're running in probably the safest Democratic seat in America. I don't know of a safer seat available to a Democrat in America.
No, you have to come to Massachusetts, and apparently the truth is otherwise here.
Chuck is an optimist.
Barney
the response
Frank,
has been to my
Barney
campaign
Frank
has been overwhelming, including from liberals, I might point out.
Yeah, Chris, I got to ask you to hurry that up because we've still got three more calls on and we've only got about 5 minutes left in this segment.
Barney's an old friend of mine, and I don't think, have fun, but I think you're just running to get publicity for your radio show because your chances of winning are zero and none.
Well, actually, the campaign is becoming a national campaign, and the contributions are coming in. The support is coming in. I'm developing a grassroots organization in every city and town, and this is a very serious endeavor.
It'll be interesting to see if the national Republicans decide that they're going to take on Barney Frank
and they're looking at it, Chuck. Thanks for that call, Chris.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Jeff in Pennsylvania is on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Hi there. Glad I could get through. I wanted to make a point about statements that people make and their effect on the troops. And personally, I think it's a civic responsibility to speak out however you feel, and you know, to have those who question the war be denigrated for their opinions. You have to look at the other side too. When people like Ann Coulter say things like we should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity, that is as much fodder for the enemy as questioning our being there.
Well, you know, look, Jeff, I'm not saying don't criticize the war. I was critical of the war before it started. A lot of people, especially conservatives, there's a difference between that and making comments about actual military situations while they're underway.
Fox News' correspondent Geraldo did.
You know, in order to win a war, you have to have a certain amount of secrecy so the enemy doesn't know what you're doing.
Well,
okay.
In regard to the statement about being sitting ducks, that's a factual statement. That's not putting anyone at risk. That's
hey,
not bringing anything out that wasn't
at Normandy
obvious.
As well. It's just not opportune right now to make a statement like that. That's all I'm saying.
Number one, this isn't Normandy, and number two,
facts are facts. And
people were not saying it in government. They gave Franklin Roosevelt a pass in 1944 when we were landing at Normandy, even if they didn't agree with him, actually. Yeah.
Jeff, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Kodak is a trucker on the road in North Carolina. He's called 1-800-TALK-YES. Welcome to the program, Kodak.
Yes, I have one question for the for your guest. At what point do we feel that we need to involve ourselves in other people's problems when we are not taking care of the people here in America? And the great, and on the subject of today, that is why we are the greatest nation, because at any time, we can say what we feel. And
amen.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not an isolationist. I think the United States should be engaged in the world. And when there's evil, whether it be Nazism or communism or now the Islamic terror apparatus, I think we should confront it and confront it with everything we have.
Okay, thank you.
Hopefully we have allies come along as well.
Chuck, for that response. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Jim in Santa Fe is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We're talking to Chuck Morse.
Yes, Tom, I appreciate you having this guest. I think he's pretty sharp for a conservative, and that's not an insult. And I understand his point about what he thinks politicians should say, and since he's running for the Senate, I think it's kind of germane.
He's
but anyway, I want to get back to that thing about what Bush stirs up by saying bring him on. I mean, I'd like to hear him defend that one.
Well, I didn't like that comment, actually, and I think that was a mistake as well. I don't think it's one of those sort of cowboy remarks. It was not helpful. I didn't like it.
Well, I appreciate that. I think the whole administration is cowboy, and that's not helpful, but I appreciate you being open about that.
No, I support our efforts. I think it's a moral crusade.
I have one other question.
I think that sometimes people make comments that are half-cocked.
I appreciate that. I want to ask one other question. Get a larger question here. Do you have any thoughts on the fact that our proposed $48 billion military increase for this year is bigger than the total military budget of any other country on Earth? Do you have any feeling on the perspective that represents?
I think that the United States, I believe in the two frontier war capability, and I think that that it probably could be done cheaper if we invested in high-tech military equipment and bombs rather than some other expenditures.
Yeah, but we are empire, so we have to do that. Chuck, I got to move this along. 1-800-TALK, yes, we've got Doug in California. We've got about a minute left here, Doug. Your comments for Chuck Morse.
Yeah, hopefully you'll allow me to continue. I've got a couple things to say, but first of all,
okay, I'll hold you over the break, but make your first point quickly here.
Okay, my first point is him not being a veteran. I was a veteran in the Vietnam era. What people don't understand is that military personnel have no civil rights or the right to speak out. They fall under military law.
That's right. It's a dictatorship.
And if we don't speak out for them, there's a lot of them that also think, like the rest of us think, that maybe these wars are not justified. Somebody needs to speak out for them.
Well, I have no problem with criticizing the war. I have problems with making comments that put people at risk.
Yeah, but the very fact that we've started a war that's not lawful puts them at risk.
Well, you could say that about every military endeavor since World War II.
So then we should say that George Bush's comments are the ones that should be being censored rather than Teddy Kennedy.
Why shouldn't he have the bully pulpit to speak over everybody else?
Doug and Chuck, if you guys will hold on for just a few minutes, we'll let you wrap this up at the 3 minutes or so at the end of the hour. We've got about a five-minute break here. Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shopping. And call the bank.
Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I didn't think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah!
Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
On the 24th of June, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said, and I quote, "I don't know anybody that I can think of who has contended that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons. I don't know anybody in any government or any intelligence agency who has ever suggested that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons," end quote. But 3 months earlier, on Tim Russert's Meet the Press, Vice President Dick Cheney said, quote, "We believe that Saddam Hussein has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons," end quote. My question for Chuck, and then I'm going to throw it over to Doug and let him get his last question out, and then we'll let Chuck have the last word. My question is, we've got these guys talking over each other, lying about each other, or profoundly misinformed. The defense secretary is saying nobody's saying such thing after the, you know, isn't, and we've got 200 guys dead and over 1,000 wounded just on our side, not to mention 6,000 civilians on the other side dead. Isn't it pretty important that we hold these people accountable for this? Now, Doug, what was your final comment here? And then we'll let Chuck close it up here.
Just to get back to the military, just to focus on that, my point has been, and well, to represent the military, the soldier on the ground. Most of our army, and as it always has been lower class and minority people serve in the military, other than the officers. So if you're going to represent the military, you're going to have to look at administration that basically has a class war going on right now to hold those people down. And these are the people that you say you're supporting with your patriotic stand.
It doesn't work. Derek. We got to cut it up there because we've only got about a minute or so left. Now I want to hear Chuck's comments on this. Chuck Morse.
Tom, thanks for having me on. You know, given the fact that Iraq was a very closed society and that it would not cooperate with the UN's weapons inspectors, it was a violation of UN resolutions, it was hard to know the degree to which Saddam Hussein had developed nuclear weapons. We know he had chemical weapons because he'd used them against his own people. We know that there is evidence that there was certainly biological attempt to create biological weapons. Whether he had them or not, nuclear-wise, their verdict is still out on that. But as Condoleezza Rice, I think, quite accurately stated on one of those talk shows, that she hoped we wouldn't wait to find out about that evidence in the form of a mushroom cloud. I think that it was reasonable and proper to go after Saddam Hussein. I think the world is safer without him, not only in terms of his threat to other countries, but also because of his oppressive socialistic regime.
Thank you, Chuck, for your comments. I appreciate it. ChuckMorse.com, M-O-R-S-E.com is Chuck's website. Thank you for being on the program today, Chuck. I strongly disagree, but I appreciate you and your willingness to be on the program and talk with us. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says President Bush's January State of the Union address, quote, misled the American people about the threat in Iraq. The White House says a sentence in the speech about Iraq trying to buy uranium in Africa should not have been in that speech because the information, it turns out, came from forged documents. Durbin is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is investigating the matter, and he appeared earlier on NBC's Today Show.
Unfortunately, those 16 words were included in the most important speech the president delivers in any given year. Who is it in the White House who was hell-bent on misleading the American people, and why are they still there?
The committee questioned CIA Director George Tenet for several hours yesterday. Tenet has taken responsibility for the Iraq uranium intelligence flap, but the Washington Post, citing unnamed senators at the hearing, is reporting Tenet yesterday had told the committee he never actually saw the final draft of the president's speech. He said he's taken the blame because an agency official did approve the address. The ranking Democrat on that committee, John D. Rockefeller, says he doesn't think the fault lies solely with Tenet. He says, quote, I think others in the administration knew the information was faulty. The rise in guerrilla activity in Iraq is expected to be on the agenda when the British and American leaders hold talks today in Washington, but Prime Minister Tony Blair is also expected to lobby President Bush for greater accountability regarding detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The story from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
The U.S. should determine the detainees' status and offer them internationally recognized means of defense if sent to trial, according to members of Tony Blair's party. They and others hope the British Prime Minister will also secure the release to the U.K. of several British citizens held at the prison camp. But it's events in Iraq and efforts to rebuild civilian structures there that's expected to dominate the talks. Both architects of the invasion remain under pressure to return that nation to self-rule and answer questions on the arguments they made for war. Alistair Wanklin, London.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me, my friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss? There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
Nine people are dead after an elderly driver plowed through a crowded farmer's market in California yesterday. More than 35 other people were also injured when police say 86-year-old Russell Weller drove into the Santa Monica marketplace at what they say was a high rate of speed. Weller reportedly told police he may have stepped on the gas accidentally when he thought he was pressing the brake. Labor Department today issued a surprisingly upbeat jobless report. The department says the number of new unemployment claims fell sharply last week by nearly 30,000. One economist says the overall unemployment rate finally seems to be slowing.
They finally did it. A weight loss formula that's guaranteed to work. And it comes from Metabolife, the leader in weight loss for years. It's new Metabolife Ultra with an appetite suppressant and sustained energy. Its key ingredients have been clinically tested and shown to help you lose weight. In fact, we're so sure that Metabolife Ultra will work for you that we absolutely guarantee your results. Go to Metabolife.com for all the details. It's available now wherever you shop. Ask for it by name. Metabolife Ultra.
With the cleanup effort already underway, officials in Texas are warning people now to be on the lookout for scam artists trying to take their money as they recover from Hurricane Claudette. Dan Parsons with the Houston Office of the Better Business Bureau says people looking to make a fast buck were just waiting for an opportunity like this.
The fly-by-nighters actually are usually well ahead of the storm. They plan to come this way. They will move into the area, and then they'll ply their trade just when people are the most vulnerable.
Parsons says the first wave of scammers will likely be in the areas of water extraction and carpet removal, with home improvement schemes likely to follow a short time later. later. Parsons recommends people be wary of door-to-door solicitations or people who only take cash and want that money up front. And he also says they should be wary of companies not listed in the phone book or with the Better Business Bureau. Wildfires, meanwhile, in three states, keeping the nation's firefighters busy. 17,000 acres in northeast Arizona have been blackened by the Kanishba fire. In California, lightning is suspected to have started a fire that spread from Riverside area to San Diego County. Colorado's Mesa Verde National Park also dealing with a lightning-sparked wildfire. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. James Dean, French food, playing hooky. All bad things that are oh so good. But, like the little girl with a curl on her forehead, bad gasoline is horrid. When I come back, I'll tell you why.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
You may get crepe Suzette out of your system by exercising, but bad gasoline in your car's system does long-lasting damage. As gasoline evaporates, it deposits harmful sludge which interacts with metals in your car's fuel system, causing gas to go rancid. Stale gas looks cloudy, smells like paint thinner, and gunks up your car's fuel injectors. Like too much French food clogs your arteries. So do what James Dean would. Go heavy on the Bernays sauce, but keep your tank filled with fresh gas. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator. And streaming audio on the internet with listeners from Europe to Asia on radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com and archived at whiterosesociety.org. Every Thursday afternoon, we have a segment in our third hour here where we try to push the boundaries of what we all thought we knew. It's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
And sometimes it turns out everything you know is wrong, or maybe you know a little bit about anything. Anyhow, we have Lisa Pizon, who's the editor of Probe magazine. And she has published, she's the co-editor, along with James DeEugenio, I believe it's pronounced, of a book called The Assassinations, Probe magazine on JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X. Governor Jesse Ventura said, if you can handle the truth, read this book. Lisa, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, I'm pleased to have you on. This is interesting. I've read a number of books about the JFK assassination, Tony Summers' book, Conspiracy, and Carlos, the book about Marcello, Kingfish by John Davis, and The Fish is Red, that got retitled Deadly Secrets, and on and on. But I've never seen anybody pull all these things together. And we just got your book yesterday or the day before. I haven't had an opportunity to read all 600 pages of it.
Right.
Is there a common thread here between JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X and their assassinations?
Well, there's kind of three common threads. The first thing people should understand is that these were the four top leaders of the liberal left in this country, and they were killed in a five-year period. Now imagine if somebody had taken out Reagan and Bush and Newt Gingrich and Colin Powell all in a five-year period. Would the right be up in arms? Would the right have survived that kind of an onslaught?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the opponent of John Ashcroft died in a plane crash, a suspicious plane crash, and then a little later, Paul Wellstone died in a suspicious plane crash. And of course, Ted Kennedy was supposed to be on that plane with him. That threw the Senate into the hands of the Republicans. And
right in both cases. I mean, when Mel Carnahan was killed, that was the guy running against Ashcroft.
Right.
Again, that was the one state that could tip the balance of power in the Senate. And the only reason the Republicans didn't run the gamut kind of as they are now is because the guy from, was it Vermont, I believe, the senator there?
Yes, Jim Jeffords.
Right, Jim Jeffords.
Yeah, he flipped. And then you've got the only people in Congress who received the anthrax, which apparently was really and truly designed to kill people. Patrick Leahy from Vermont, he was the guy, he was the head of the Judiciary Committee who was in a position to say no to the Patriot Act and
exactly.
was planning to, apparently. And it
Tom
threw
Daschle.
Him out of his... And Tom Daschle. I mean, you know, it's like...
Dan Rather at CBS, who's never been a fan of the Bushes.
Okay, so is the, you, do you think that this is all part of one giant, as Hillary would say, vast right-wing conspiracy?
Well, how do I want to say this? No, in a simplistic sense, no. But in a general sense, I definitely think that there are people who will go to any means to get what they want. And a lot of them end up in high places in government, because, you know, to some degree, I think it takes a little bit of that mentality to get there. I think there are a lot of honest people in government, or relatively honest people in mm-hmm. government, you know, as much as can be assumed. But there are people who will kill, who will bribe, who will poison, who will do whatever. And I think every now and then, some of them slip through to the upper echelons.
Okay, so the first thread between these four, JFK, MFK, RFK, and Malcolm X, was that they were the primary four leaders of the liberal left, as it were, in the United States at the time, and they all died within a few years of each other.
Right.
You said there were two or three threads.
Right, and they were all opposing the Vietnam War, which is, you know, interesting, because now we have a bunch of people opposing, you know, the war in Iraq. I fear for their lives sometimes. Most importantly, in each of the four cases, there was a conspiracy, a provable, documentable, verifiable conspiracy, and in each of the four cases, there was a cover-up at the government, at the highest levels of the government. All right, you know, in the case of Malcolm X, that's always been assumed to be a conspiracy, but most people heard it was a conspiracy of black Muslims, and most people aren't aware of the outer layers of that conspiracy that reach right back to the government.
There's a theory within the black Muslim organization, as I recall, that even though it was a fellow black Muslim who was accused of killing him or who was convicted of that, that he was an FBI informer, that he was some kind of government agent. Is that the
Yeah, there's some evidence of that we go into in the book. So some of it is brand new. Some of it has been around for a long time, but it hasn't really been put in the context with these other assassinations. Because really, when you do look at them, you see a lot of patterns. For example, in the John Kennedy case, everybody's familiar with the fact that Lee Oswald appeared to have a double who was running around and impersonating him. But what most people don't know is that in the James Earl Ray case, for the Martin Luther King case, there was also a case kind of a double, too. In fact, when James Earl Ray was actually arrested in London, where he'd been, you know, supposedly hiding out, another man using the same alias, both of them were arrested under the name Ramon George Sned, S-N-E-Y-D. And two arrests happened that day. And, you know, that's something that's just not talked about much. You know, James Earl Ray actually used different aliases, and each of his aliases were actual people. And one of them went and got nose surgery, and then James Earl Ray went and got nose surgery. I mean, was that just coincidence?
Well, and on the same week that Lee Oswald formed the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, weren't there several others who were forming Fair Play for Cuba Committees in other major cities in the United States?
Oh, you know, that I don't know for sure.
Yeah. And what about with the RFK assassination?
Oh, now the RFK, that is so interesting. I mean,
they
that
found more bullets than there were in that guy's gun, weren't they? Didn't they?
Right. Well, yeah. The key evidence there that anybody should understand, and that's never been argued, by the way, successfully, is that the autopsy evidence shows that Robert Kennedy was shot from a distance of not greater than 2 inches from behind the right ear. And he determined that by the stippling patterns of the gunpowder, you know, from the gun. The closer the gun is, the more powder there's going to be. They get powder burns, actually. When you're far away, there is no such marking. So they could tell the gun was almost right against his head.
And Sirhan never got closer than 6 feet from him, did he?
Right. Well, some people said, most witnesses said the gun muzzle was about 3 feet in front of Kennedy. A couple said it was as close as a foot and a half, and one guy said a foot, but he was looking through a camera, so his sense of distance is probably not as believable. But even a foot and a half, I mean, let's give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Even if we put it a foot, it was still in front, and Kennedy was shot from behind, and a foot is not 2 inches, no matter how
you fight. Now, wasn't RFK's security guard who was standing right behind him with a gun connected to the mob?
Yes, there was. And he was not only connected to the mob. What's very interesting is he seems to have ties right back to the CIA, because he worked for the Hughes Organization at the time when the Hughes Organization was controlled by Robert Mayhew, who was, among other things, the assassination planner for the CIA for the Castro plots.
And who was also good buddies with Meyer Lansky, and the Hughes Organization now is about to be bought by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
Is this all coming all around?
That's the thing. The interweaving of the mob, intelligence agencies, and big government is really kind of the untold story of our time. And, you know, our world economy is financed in large part by drug money. I mean, there's just such a... I feel like we live in the Matrix. You know, I think that movie was a wonderful analogy of what it's been like studying these cases. It's like taking the red pill and going, oh, my God, this world is a horrible, ugly place, and it's not at all the little quiet, you know, day-to-day sort of Disney World version, you know, of the country that we get in the media so often.
Well, though, at the same time, there are good and noble people who stand up and speak out. Paul Wellstone, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and there are still many of them who are still alive, you know, who haven't been knocked off.
Oh, yes.
And
let me just add, there's some good people in the intelligence agencies, too. I remember when the first Gulf War happened, Patrick Eddington, one of the analysts there, came forward and said, you know, that he knew about the chemical weapons, you know, used in the Gulf War, and he tried to get the truth out. And right now there are people who are opposing, you know, George Bush from within the intelligence agency and are mad as hell that he's blaming this whole 16 words, you know, of the Niger uranium documents on the CIA. And they're saying, hey, we told you that was false. You know, you should never have put that in the State of the Union. And now George Tenet, of course, has fallen on his sword for the president because he's a politician. You know,
although yesterday he sort of unfell. He said,
right.
I didn't actually read that speech.
That's right. And he said his guy was heavily pressured by somebody at the White House, you know, to let that statement go by.
I just want to say,
even when we say, you know, the mob or, you know, the intelligence agencies, I don't mean everybody in intelligence, you know. And if I were to say something like, well, the CIA was very involved in the John Kennedy assassination, which they were, I'm not really meaning the CIA as an agency overall, but I do mean very specific high-level people in the CIA, many of whom we name in the book.
Like E. Howard Hunt?
E. Howard Hunt.
Later a Watergate burglar.
Yeah, yeah. One of the most interesting characters who wasn't written about in a lot of the early literature, but now that we're actually getting the House Select Committee files, there's a real paper trail there, and that's James Angleton. He was the head of counterintelligence for 25 years at the CIA, and he left kind of under a cloud because it turned out that he had been not only performing counterintelligence operations on foreigners, but also on Americans here at home, especially during the anti-war movement. So
yeah, you have two chapters about him that you wrote in the book. That
and the reason
very
for that is his paper, the Oswald paper trail, goes right back to Angleton's office, and not just to the general counterintelligence, you know, arm of what he did, which would be expected. You know, if he suspected communists in America, I would expect him to have files in counterintelligence, and that would prove nothing. But what's very significant is his files are not just in counterintelligence. They're in a very secret black op part of counterintelligence that Angleton held very closely, that only about six people ever worked in. And that's where Oswald's file was opened, way back in 1959, long before the Kennedy assassination. That's where documents were funneled, right up until 62, when Oswald started, or right until 63, I guess, when Oswald started getting into the Cuban operations. Then the files started going to a different place.
Well, I think most people don't.
Right.
I'm sorry. I think most people don't realize that Oswald had studied Russian at Natsugi Air Force Base along with in Japan, along with several other people, that all of them kind of en masse defected to Russia, that all of them eventually got kicked out, that Senator John Tower paid for Oswald to fly back to the United States. I mean, there's all these. And it was never questioned. He wasn't stopped. It was this guy who had renounced his citizenship, theoretically. He was never even interrogated by
right.
INS.
Well, and actually, John Newman, the professor of intelligence, found that Oswald was debriefed by the CIA. There's documents now that show that. And for the CIA to lie about that is what makes it suspicious. Because, again, if he had just been a regular foreigner who had traveled abroad and come home, the CIA was debriefing everybody who had been to foreign countries. That wouldn't have been a big deal. The fact that they felt the need to lie about it and keep it secret indicates there's something else going on.
We're talking with Lisa Pease, who with her co-editor James DiEugenio is the author of The Assassinations, Probe Magazine on JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X. We'll be back in 4 minutes. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Cross Country Tour by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the first and third tank of gas, between the 32 napkin soda spill, the exit you missed, and the one that you took without even knowing it, between the big city and, the smell of farm country, somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
Federal college loan rates are now at a 37-year low, which means if you currently have a college loan, it's time to refinance and lock in these record low rates. Call 1-800-2-COLLEGE and we'll help you lock in a rate as low as 3.5%. These federal loans have no fees, costs, or credit checks. Call 1-800-2-COLLEGE to speak with a college loan professional who will help you lower your monthly payment and lock in these record low interest rates. Call 1-800-2-COLLEGE anytime, 24/7. It's the smartest call you could make.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding me? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle here on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Lisa Pease, who is the co-editor of The Assassinations, Probe magazine on JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X. Lisa, we have about 5 minutes left here, and I want to just three quick things, and I'll just toss them all out at you and let you take them in any order you want and however you want. Number one, a couple of folks in our chat room have been talking about how to find you on the web. One of them typed Probe magazine into a search engine and got a bunch of very strange things. So if you want to put out a URL where people can find more out about it. Secondly, one of the folks in our chat room said, I'm always scared that if I read too much about the 9/11 conspiracy stuff, I'll have to start wearing tinfoil on my head. Oh, that's not the one. Question. What does she think about the 9/11 conspiracies? I'm assuming you don't wear tinfoil on your head. And,
no, I don't.
Neither do I. And the third is who killed JFK. So there you go.
Well, we'll start with who killed JFK. We don't name names of shooters in the book. So if you're looking for that, this is the wrong book for you. This is all about unraveling what the government knew, when it knew it, what they didn't tell us, and what it all means. And that's true in each of the cases. I think you will find your own answers. I think they're in the book. I just, like I said, you're going to find them yourself. If you look at all at the record, you will find out who killed Kennedy. It's right there.
Okay.
And, all right, what were the other questions? The 911 case, I think that the government has to explain why it didn't intercept the plane that hit the Pentagon. I think that is the biggest unanswered question.
That plane was in the air for nearly an hour, wasn't it?
Pardon?
That plane was in the air for nearly an hour, wasn't it?
Right. Well, it was also another 40 minutes after the first two towers had been hit. So by then, they clearly knew something was up. And
yeah.
they knew four planes were missing. So I really want to understand why they didn't intercept. They actually had planes that had been scrambled to chase the jets going to New York, but they were too late. Those planes were closer to the one going to the Pentagon than the ones they eventually scrambled. They called back the closer planes and sent planes from further away. Maybe that was all just a bad misunderstanding. You know, maybe it was just a bunch of incompetent people, and maybe it was something more sinister.
Well, I have a question that ties into that, Lisa. And
sure.
What was the name of the guy who shot Ronald Reagan? I'm drawing a blank
John
for a moment.
Hinckley.
John Hinckley, okay. Imagine if the day after or the day that John Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan, probably that's not such a good example because we knew right away who John Hinckley was. Think of a better one. But anyhow,
Luther King case, we didn't know it was James O'Reilly, so maybe...
Yeah, okay, so yeah. With the Martin Luther King case, what if the day after Martin Luther King had been shot and we still didn't know that it was James Earl Ray and the President of the United States had ordered a 747 to fly around the country and pick up all the members of James Earl Ray's family and spirit them out of the United States to a foreign country, never to return?
Right.
What would we think?
Right.
And this, of course, is what happened with the Bin Laden family. All the members were picked up by a private... This was the only airplane that was allowed to fly. I mean, everything else was grounded.
Right.
What do you think of this?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this?
I think there's a lot to be learned there. And like I said, I'm actually not somebody who theorizes or speculates before the data is in. After the data is in and it's on the record, I'm going to have a lot to say about 911, I am sure of it. But right now...
Are you
now,
working on a book on it?
Pardon?
Are you working on a book on it?
I'm not working on a book on it, but I'm collecting stuff as I find it, and I'm putting it in a file, and we'll see what happens. So,
okay, great. And the last question was Probe Magazine. How can people find out more about your book and your magazine?
Right.
Online?
Well, the easiest way to get to the magazine is probably through our book site. We have a site at www.theassassinations.com. And if you go there,
theassassinationsplural.com.
Exactly.
Okay.
Theassassinations.com. And if you go there, we link to the magazine, so you don't have to... There is another magazine called Probe that we have nothing to do with that's a bunch of old, weird, crazy stuff. But no, our, like I said, our research is really solid. It's not mired in conspiracy theory. We don't go by one person said this or that. We usually use the documents from the government against themselves.
Yeah, I found it fascinating, the time that I've been able to spend with it. Lisa, thank you very much for being on our program. I appreciate it. Very kind of you to join us. The Assassinations, Lisa Pease, the co-editor, helping you win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back in just a minute with Bernie Sanders and Alan Greenspan.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Striking hotel workers in Chicago are taking their protest into cyberspace this week. Workers at the Congress Plaza Hotel and Convention Center walked off the job on Tuesday after their employer refused to follow a citywide labor pact won last year, instead ordering employees to accept a 7% pay cut. Local 1 of the hotel employees and restaurant employees wants guests to avoid the 840-room hotel until the Congress agrees to a contract, and they're targeting the popular online travel company Orbitz, whose website invites travelers to stay in the hotel.
More good news for a year-long organizing campaign involving workers at a bulletproof vest factory in Florida. In January, a federal district court forced Point Blank Body Armor to rehire 175 workers who struck for the right to unionize in Fort Lauderdale. Yesterday, a National Labor Relations Board judge ruled Point Blank violated the rights of three workers it fired for organizing activities and ordered the company to pay them an estimated $300,000 in back wages and damages.
Managers of a Borders bookstore in suburban Chicago fired a known union supervisor this week, prompting union organizers to file a number of unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board. The worker was ostensibly let go for allowing a performer to set up a tip jar in the store in violation of Borders policy, but union supporters say that managers have similarly broken that rule without repercussions, and they say the employees' support for the United Food and Commercial Workers was management's real motivation for the firing. A separate complaint charges that managers quizzed the worker about union activity during his termination interview, also in violation of the National Labor Relations Act.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
They seek him here, they seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion.
And when he welcome dies, back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Oh, we're having a great day today and a lot of fun. Interesting guest. Tom DeLay, in a briefing with reporters, this is from the Associated Press today, said he had no second thoughts about his office's decision. It turns out he's now confessed that his office was the one that it's called the FAA on May 12th to locate the plane of Representative Pete Laney. Laney, of course, was one of those Democrats in Texas who fled the state to try and shut down the legislative process because the Republicans were fixing to redistrict the state to eliminate a bunch of Democratic seats, something that should be done every 10 years. Every year that ends with zero is a consequence of the census that is done just before that. And it was done in the year that ended with zero, in the year 2000 in Texas. And, in fact, it was so contentious between the Democrats and the Republicans that they turned it over to a judge that both of them agreed was fair. And now Tom DeLay has decided he wants more Republicans in Congress, and he's going to squeeze them out of Texas. So he pulled in the Department of Homeland Security, many would say illegally, using federal government resources, not just federal government resources like, you know, the FBI, I mean investigative resources, for politics. This is a huge crime, frankly. And here he is saying he had no second thoughts about it. It preceding a House hearing yesterday, there was a House hearing focusing on whether the Department of Transportation investigation into an eight-hour search for Laney's plane was legal or not, and what was done, and how. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out, if Tom DeLay is going to be able to wiggle out of that. Everybody up until very recently had been saying, oh, it's those guys in Texas. Turns out, no, it's Tom DeLay. And not only has he been supporting this in Texas, but in Colorado and other states as well. But in Texas, it was the one where he brought in the feds. And a big problem. A larger issue here I'd like to get into. Federal Reserve Chairman Greenspan yesterday warned that, quote, substantial and excessive, end quote, deficits in the federal budget over time will harm the ability to drive down the unemployment rate. In other words, they're going to cause businesses to continue to not be able to hire people. And the way that that will happen is that the federal government's out there borrowing money, and it's competing with everybody else who wants to borrow money, which means businesses. And as money dries up or money becomes less available, money becomes more expensive. Simple supply and demand. And the way that money becomes more expensive is that interest rates rise. Well, they're artificially keeping the price of money low right now by the ability of the Fed to manipulate interest rates. But the reality is that it's not working all that well. They are keeping low the rate, the discount rate, the rate the banks can borrow from the Fed and the banks borrow from each other and loan money. You know, within the banking system, they're keeping that rate low. But the banks themselves, I mean, credit card rates, you still see credit cards out there that are 20, 22%, and home mortgage rates are starting to creep up again. And so what we're seeing is, as a result of this government spending, as a result of this debt and these deficits, that money's becoming more expensive. This drains savings. Well, here's a quote from Greenspan. There's no question that if you run substantial and excessive deficits over time, you are draining savings from the private sector. And he says, there's no question we need to come to grips with this deficit question. Now, it sounds like, you know, Greenspan is saying, oh, this is something that, you know, we need to concern ourselves with. But let me put this in a larger context. Alan Greenspan and the conservatives and objectivists that he represents are very concerned about the cost of money with regard to the ability of large corporations to borrow. They are not at all concerned, and I realize this is going to sound really strong, but I absolutely defy anybody to demonstrate to me that this is not the case. They are not at all concerned with whether or not the average person can survive, with the quality of life of people in the United States who are not millionaires and billionaires. And I'm very proud that my congressman, Bernie Sanders, from the People's Republic of Vermont here, yesterday stood up to Alan Greenspan, perhaps it was the day before yesterday, and I'd like to share with you part of that dialogue, because toward the end of this, Greenspan comes right out and admits it, comes right out and says, we're really only interested in the impact of our policies on big corporations. So here's Bernie Sanders, first of all. He sets this thing up.
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions, and I urge you, and I mean this seriously.
And he really does, by the way. Let me just interject here. I mean, Bernie Sanders is, I believe he's really actually on a crusade to try to educate Alan Greenspan, to try to say to some of these guys, hey, you were born with a gold, a silver spoon in your mouth. You never knew, you know, want. I remember when George Bush was senior, was amazed by those scanners at the supermarket. He, oh, hi, this is amazing new technology. They've been out for 10 years. He's really trying to wake him up. He says, I urge you.
Because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world. And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule.
And yet they're the ones who are running the country and running our economic policy. And I'm telling you, increasingly, the conventional wisdom, people are spouting these Rushisms and Bushisms of it's about the economy needs to be an absolute free market. Let's get back to Bernie here. I'll finish the
rant. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving. I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking. Now, today you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't, but you have insulted tens of millions of American workers.
And here Bernie Sanders is starting to get to the nub of the issue. What is the purpose of the Fed? What is the purpose of government providing a substrate, a matrix on which business can operate? Business can't exist without a secure banking system. Business can't exist without highways that work. Business can't exist without water and electricity. Business can't exist without a court system that backs it up. Business can't exist without government. Government authorizes and allows for the existence of business. And why? Because we, the people who create government, expect to derive benefit from that business. So there's a loop. People to government to business back to people. And as Franklin Roosevelt said, any product made by people who don't earn a living wage should be considered contraband. And this is that radical perspective that I'd say the radical middle that everybody once understood in this United States, and that the conservatives have so completely obscured that people think that only the interests of corporations, only the interests of shareholders, only the interests of stockholders are what matters. It's the Dow Jones Industrial Average that measures the health of the country. It's not. What measures the health of the country is whether or not the average working person can pay for their children's education, can cover their own health insurance, can make their house payments, can live the American dream, and that is slipping. And government plays a role in that. It's not just transfers of payments, as the cons would have you think. Bernie continues along these lines.
You have defended over the years, among other things, the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires. But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced.
See, this is the thing. The whole conservative agenda, Bernie is just summarizing, the entire conservative agenda boils down to cheap labor. It's all about cheap labor. Keep them barefoot, keep them pregnant, keep them dumb, keep those babies coming, keep those people, more and more and more, because cheap labor. And stop the tort reform, don't allow people to fight back against big corporations, keep labor cheap. Break the unions, keep people terrified, keep labor cheap. Keep the unemployment rate up, keep people afraid, so afraid that they won't unionize, that they won't demand higher wages, keep labor cheap. That's the bottom line of the conservative agenda.
We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce.
And that's a crime. It's an absolute crime. And that is the direct result of government policy.
Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages. And all of that does not matter to you. Doesn't matter if it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour. It doesn't matter. You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out, only working for the CEOs who can take our plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican, told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs.
This is this massive exodus of jobs now to India, to China, to particularly to India right now is huge, of software engineer, of people, just people answering telephones. You call the major hotel chains now, and the people answering the credit card company, the people answering the telephones more often than not are in a third world nation. Why? Because they will work for a dollar an hour.
Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and 136 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
And that's the bottom line question. Let's see how Greenspan responds.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms of education, health care, and decent-paying jobs. Wrong, Mr. Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
And now Greenspan is going to set up his, this is a weasel answer. He's going to say, for a country our size, we have this highest standard of living in the world. It's like saying, for a blue car, I've got the bluest car in the world.
For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size. Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes, the purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce. I submit to you
in other words, Bernie doesn't believe it.
Major focus of monetary policy.
It's the major focus.
To create an environment in this country which enables capital investment and innovation to advance. We are at.
That's it. He continues blithering on, but let me just repeat that. This is what Alan Greenspan thinks his job is all about.
Capital investment and innovation to advance.
Oops, got it in the wrong spot. I'm going to back it up just a little bit.
Country which enables capital investment and innovation to advance.
Here's how he finishes it up.
We are at the cutting edge of technologies in the world. We are doing an extraordinary job over the years.
So here he's talking about business, not labor.
People.
And then he goes into the old saw. Well, people want to come to America, therefore we must be doing something right. Well, people want to come to lots of countries around the world. And yes, the American dream is alive and well, and this is an extraordinary country, particularly compared to the third world. That doesn't mean, Mr. Greenspan, that we have to sell out our own workers. It doesn't mean that we have to just flush them down. It doesn't mean that Walmart should pay wages where somebody can't, even if they buy all their stuff at Walmart, theoretically the cheapest around, they can't even survive a family. But nonetheless, he trots out this old saw, which has absolutely nothing to do with what Bernie Sanders was talking about.
To the United States.
People flock to the United States.
Our immigration rates are very high. And why? Because they think this is a wonderful country.
That is an incredible answer.
And by incredible, Bernie meant, and in fact they had to shut him up by pounding the gavel, he meant, I can't believe this BS coming from Alan Greenspan. But I think that it's important to note that Alan Greenspan laid it right out on the table that he views his job, he views the job of the Fed.
To create an environment in this country which enables capital investment and innovation to advance.
which allows capital investment and innovation to advance. In other words, we are here to support the businesses. And the whole idea that we are providing a context in which business can survive, can exist, and can flourish, and that's a good thing. We want to do that. And that along with that, there should be an obligation on the part of business to provide a decent living for those people who are providing the labor that also allows business to survive and to exist is completely gone. It's not part of Ayn Rand's philosophy. You won't find it in objectivism. You won't find it in which Alan Greenspan, he's an old objectivist, and all, you know, he read Atlas Shrugged when he was young, and he was one of those people who read this super simplistic black and white view of the world that completely misses the whole point of the American Revolution and thought it was real. And boom, down the toilet, the whole idea goes of democracy, of what the preamble of the Constitution of the United States is, that this country was formed to promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty for us and our followers. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of they the transnational corporations. Stay with us. We'll return in just a few moments.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
In case you don't know about the benefits of balancing your fat intake and you care about health, check this out. I'm Bob Harris for Smart Balance Buttery Spread. Scientists spent years searching for the ideal balance of dietary fats with no cholesterol, no hydrogenation, no trans fatty acids. Smart Balance used this blend of vegetable oils in a delicious replacement for regular butter and margarine with award-winning taste. Smart Balance. You're really going to love this spread.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear Molloy program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, funny twist.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Russian blue, scarlet fleece changes hue, crimson ball sinks from view.
Program on the IE America Radio Network. According, we got our copy of the Progressive in the mail yesterday. A civic duty on page 11 from the Arizona Daily Star. In April, I'm quoting from the Arizona Daily Star quoted in the Progressive. In April, when the Republicans on the New York City Board of Elections killed a plan to repair voting machines that had under-recorded votes in the 2000 election, with most of the unlucky voters being Democrats, Republican Commissioner Stephen Weiner denied that his party's disinterest in properly functioning voting machines showed a bias against Democrats. He said, quote, "There are some people who don't want their vote registered, but who report to the polls for civic reasons," end quote. Yesterday afternoon, I was, I've become, as a, because of the timing of this show and everything, afterwards, get a little work done, a little writing, this and that, email, and then at 4:30 try to catch Crossfire, the show on CNN, because it's just fascinating. And afterwards, and usually I get back to work after that, but afterwards I was feeling unwilling to move, and so in a channel surfing moment, came across a Gilligan's Island repeat, and in it, the the rich guy played by Jim Mr. Howell was trying to buy a candle from the professor, and the professor says, "Well, that'll be $6,000 and then Mr. Howell goes to this little restaurant that Marianne and what's her name, the other woman, had put together, and is presented with a bill, and it's like $300 and it was what this show did so elegantly. It was amazing. Yeah, I mean, Gilligan's Island here. He's quoting Gilligan's Island on the radio. Can you believe it? Yeah, Gilligan's. What it illustrated was that an economy is meaningless without some sort of a consensus, some sort of a structure that defines the value of the things that move within the economy. If you don't have a government saying, here's money and here's what it's worth, then you can't. Then business is meaningless. And therefore, that business owes its existence to government. So, did we create government solely for the purpose of business? No. We created government solely for the purpose of we, the people, and our lives. And business is one of the ways that we facilitate that. And that is what is so missed in the Khan agenda. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place. Thanks for being with us today.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Doolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but...